and right, yet he refused to accept.
Excuse me.
And secondly was Shaitan's defiance. He knew what was evil and wrong, yet he deliberately committed it. And hence he disqualified himself from continuing to receive God's special grace. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We turn humbly to God and we ask for His help and we ask for His guidance for three reasons. Number one, we believe He is Allah, the absolute, infinite, perfect being, and therefore the source of all perfection. Therefore, anyone who hopes to achieve any goodness necessarily must turn to Him, because that is where it will all originate. Though, when it reaches us, it may pass through a variety of media. And secondly, we turn to Him because we believe He is Rahman. He's overflowing with love and grace and mercy infinitely. And therefore, each and everything in the universe is nothing but a continuous expression and manifestation of His mercy, of His love, of His grace, whereby everything is alive because of His love. It survives, it grows, it thrives, it develops towards its perfection because of God's continuous attention and grace and love and mercy. And therefore we turn to Him for help. And thirdly, we turn to Him because we believe He is Rahim. Not only is His continuous universal love and grace available to everyone, but there is a special type of mercy which is abundant, which is much deeper, which is much greater, which is unlimited, but that is specifically available to some only, to those who respond to Him, who believe in Him, and who obey His dictates. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. And we send our salutations and greetings on the Holy Prophet of Islam, who was the most praised one, because he was the most perfect one. And the reason for his perfection is twofold. Fundamentally, his comprehension of the reality of the universe and the absolute truth of the universe, this realization was maximum for any human being. Of who God is, of what God's perfect attributes are, of what God's action and governing of the universe is, moment by moment, with total control over every particle, and with total love and mercy and wisdom, Allah is directing the universe towards His goal of perfection. These truths and realities of Tawheed were appreciated and acknowledged and believed by the Prophet in a maximum possible way for any human being. And secondly, it translated into action in such a way that in his personal life, in his thoughts, in his feelings, in his behavior, in his public life, in all dimensions, the Holy Prophet was the most submissive and the most humble to the will of God, and therefore the most praised one, and therefore the most perfect one. And we send our salutations and greetings on his holy progeny, who were the next best in perfection after him, and especially so the third holy Imam, whose movement then became the role model for all times to come to establish global justice and divine values on the earth. Respected elders, brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. We were discussing the importance of participating and engaging in the ritual of mourning and weeping, but in a way that would enable us to achieve some of the goals which God the Almighty and which the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt have communicated to us. So I suggested that one stage of weeping would be the emotional one, whereby when we hear the horrendous rendering of the tragedy, any normal human being, even if he's not a believer, would be moved and would respond and would weep. And this is a very sacred, valued, worthy reaction, to such an extent that we're told that even if a drop of tear, as small as the size of the wing of a fly, were to come out, even that is going to be recorded and rewarded. وَلَوْ كَانَتْ مِثْلُ جَنَاحِ الزُّبَابِ. But more important than that is the second level of weeping, whereby we begin to understand the true status of the Imam and of the companions and of the purpose of their sacrifice, which I characterize as the empathic level of weeping, where the riwayat tell us it is arifan bihaqqih. You recognize his true status. And then beyond that is a level of weeping where not only is there mental appreciation and recognition of who he is, but gradually there is submission in the heart, whereby the whole of the being of this person begins to respond to the reality and the perfection of the personality of Karbala, which is then mentioned in the riwayat as, if I were to characterize verbally my inner state of feeling at the time of weeping, when I experienced this, this is how I would speak out. Labbaika da'i Allah. I hear what has happened. I imagine. It is so moving. Your personality is so clear. I am so moved that I wish I were there. But I've been separated by history. Doesn't matter. Even today, if there were an opportunity, I would spring to action. لَبَّيْكَ دَاعِيَ اللَّهِ إِن كَانَ لَمْ يُجِبْكَ بَدَنِي فَقَدْ أَجَابَكَ قَلْبِي وَشَعْرِي وَبَشَرِي وَهَوَايِ وَرَأِي. The totality of my being is responding to your call to establish truth and justice and divine values. And then I suggested that there was a fourth level of weeping, whereby we connect to the purpose of existence, the existential level, where we say that the purpose of creation is the final establishment of the divine values on the earth. And that requires people to appreciate what the truth is. One, to be able to accept it. Two, to be able to live according to it. Three, to be able to establish a society based on it. Four, to be ready to die for it. Five, how do I prepare for that? Identify with Karbala through weeping. And if I were to verbally express those feelings during the time of weeping, this is what I would say. نصرتي لكم معدة. My support for you is ever ready, even now, even today. فَمَعَكُمْ مَعَكُمْ لَا مَعَ عَدُوِّكُمْ. I am declaring my association with you and you alone, and never with your opponents. Next slide, please. But in order for us to be able to engage in weeping at this particular level, we need to appreciate what is it that the Imam stood up for? What is it that he was fighting against? And in order to enable us to appreciate this better, we need to remind ourselves that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, as the heir of the legacy of the prophets, stood up for the same reasons that all the prophets stood up for. As-salamu alayka ya warith. We say that he's the warith of all the prophets, and therefore he fought for the very same principles and for the same virtues and godly values that the prophets stood up for. Different surahs in the Quran discuss this in different details. One example I would like to share with you is Surah Shu'ara, chapter 26. Look at these verse numbers, if they can be broken down into paragraphs. Notice from ayah number 105 down to ayah number 191, five different prophets are discussed, each with a particular problem that they had in their community at that particular time. I would like to draw your attention to three basic facts. Fact number one, the problem that each prophet faced was not unique to that time. That problem can be at other times, in fact, even our time. Two, now we have no prophets. Now we have the followers of the last prophet. Perhaps one of the reasons, according to some scholars, why we have the last prophet and no more prophets after him is because mankind over history has grown, developed, matured. It has reached a level whereby it can be granted and bestowed with the same degree of responsibility that was given to the prophets. But in order for me to keep the spirit alive and the legacy of the prophets, I need a strong reminder. In addition to the Quranic theoretical teaching, it's the practical example of Imam Hussein alayhi salam that plays this role. These are the three basic realities. Just keep at the back of your mind as we then discuss these problems. Can we go to the next slide, please? So there is this general introduction for every prophet, that they went to the community. I am your brother, I have a message for you, I'm equal to you, I'm concerned about you. That we should establish godly values, accept that there is a Lord, that He is the Master, that our prosperity is in obeying His law. Common teaching of almost all the prophets. But different communities responded differently because of the problems that they had. Next slide, please. Skip that, please. So, for example, come to one of the early human communities, that of Prophet Nuh, alayhi salam. I am a brother to you. Why don't you worship only one Lord and obey me as the representative of God on the earth? And I've shown you miracles that prove that I'm a prophet. And don't think I want power over you and that you should pay me. I want nothing back from you. In ma as'alukum alayhi min ajr, in ajriya illa ala rabbil alameen. Look at their response. Qalu anu'minu lak wattaba'aka al-arzalun. Do you expect us to follow you? Who are your followers? These riffraff, outcast, low caste people in the community? Oh, we are different. We come from a different background. We've got different social status. Alright, you seem to be a right person, but we can't associate with you. When social status, social self superiority becomes an obstacle to accepting the truth, that becomes a problem. Which Imam Hussein alayhi salam also had to face, and which in some way or the other is in our times also. Next slide, please. For example, after the Prophet's demise, notice this problem of superiority of the Arab over the non-Arab. In some of the Khalifa's time, it was a policy matter now, social classes. Arabs should get more privileges over non-Arabs. Amongst the Arabs, those who are of a particular tribe get more privileges over the other. Amongst that particular tribe, those who did hijrah should get more compared to the others. Different classes were introduced, the result of which later on was a false sense of superiority, which then becomes an obstacle to the truth. Do you think that is a problem only in Imam's time? It's there all the time. It's there even in our time. Social self, sense of superiority. It's a huge field of discussion. I would just like to quote a simple example. It's just like you've got a big problem and you look at the iceberg, and I just tell you the tip of the iceberg, and beneath the ocean there's a huge problem that lies. Jessica Williams is a BBC journalist, TV producer. She's compiled statistics on various problems. She names her book Facts That Can Shake You or That Can Change the World. One of the statistics she quotes is that amongst the advanced countries, the United States has the largest prison population. In the beginning of the 21st century, 2 million people were imprisoned in the United States. That's the largest number. And then she says, well, look at the trends back in 1970, and then look at the year 2000. If these trends continue, you know what's going to happen in the future in the 21st century? You'll find that a child who was born in the year 2001, the chances that this child in the United States will end up in the prison is 1 out of 17, of course, if he's white. But if you're Hispanic, then there's 1 chance in 6 you'll go to prison if you're born 2001. But if you're black, it's 1 chance in 3. Shocking. But there's some problem, social problem. Somehow the laws have been designed in such a way. Somehow they are implemented in such a way that a particular social group is being targeted. Like I said, we don't want to enter into details. The point is, there are problems all the time, and sometimes they become so acute that in the Imam Hussein alayhi salam's time, the only way to solve it was for him to sacrifice his life for it. Next slide, please. Take a second example. In the same surah Shu'ara, ayah number 128 to ayah 130. To the people of Ad, the prophet Hud went, I'm a brother to you. I am from God. These are the proofs that I'm a messenger. Let's obey God. They rejected. But the problem with them and the reason for rejection is, look at the statement of Prophet Hud. أَتَبْنُونَ بِكُلِّ رِيعٍ آيَةً تَعْبَثُونَ. What is the problem with you? On every prominent place you seem to be building a huge structure, construction. You're trying to show off a lot. You seem to have excess. You are wasting your resources. 1, 2. وَتَتَّخِذُونَ مَصَانِعَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَخْلُدُونَ. And the way you construct, and the way you're obsessed with this world, it's as if you've forgotten that there is a life hereafter. وَإِذَا بَطَشْتُمْ بَطَشْتُمْ جَبَّارِينَ. And look at the power that you have developed. When you exercise that power, you're excessive. A problem with some communities and civilizations where they enter into frivolity, they enter into luxury, they enter into excessive use of force. And a prophet has to be sent to them to reform these excessive tendencies. Next slide, please. It was a problem not only the prophet's time, it was a problem in Imam Hussein alayhi salam's time. That famous incident where Ibn Ziyad enters Kufa, and then subsequently he uses excessive force to quash the uprising of Ibn Muslim, Muslim Ibn Aqil. And then the followers of the Ahlul Bayt are terrorized. And this is again not a problem unique to that. Again, tip of the iceberg. Look at this statistic of the Amnesty International report. More than 150 governments throughout the world, that's almost 2/3 of the governments in the world, are reported to use excessive force, torture. It's not a problem unique to that time. It's a problem that happens everywhere. Next slide, please. Look at the third example. Prophet Salih was sent to the people of Thamud. Ayah number 146 to ayah number 152. أَفَتُتْرَكُونَ فِيمَا هَاهُنَا آمِنِينَ. You seem to have been provided so much luxury, people of Thamud. So Salih tells them, wake up. You think all these, you enjoy jannatin wa uyun, so much produce, so much flow of goods, wazuru'in, and farms,
وَالنَّخْلٍ طَلْعُهَا هَضِيمٍ. These fruits, delicious, dainty, tasty, available. It's all there, all the time. Do you think this will continue all the time? You have a false sense of security. One. Two. وَتَنْحِتُونَ مِنَ الْجِبَالِ بُيُوتًا فَارِهِينَ. And you have amazing construction skills. You're creating homes out of mountains. But there's one big problem. With all these resources, with all this productivity and creativity, you are just an instrument in the hand of the evil empire. وَلَا تُطِيعُوا أَمْرَ الْمُسْرِفِينَ الَّذِينَ يُفْسِدُونَ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا يُصْلِحُونَ. Such a big problem that a prophet had to be sent to reform that tendency. The problem existed in the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam also. They were rich people, they were powerful people, but they became tools in the hands of the evil system and empire to be used against the truth. Next slide, please. Fourth example mentioned in Surah Shu'ara, ayah number 165. When Prophet Lut went to the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, he tells them, "What is the problem with you people? أَتَأَتُونَ الذُّكْرَانَ مِنَ الْعَالَمِينَ. Allah has created females and you abandon them and you go for the males. وَتَذَرُونَ مَا خَلَقَ لَكُمْ رَبُّكُمْ مِنْ أَزْوَاجِكُمْ. Allah, your creator, your master, your provider, who knows your needs, has created legal, lawful partners for you, has created normal desires in you for each other, yet you abandon that, and you go for your own sex partners. إِنَّكُمْ قَوْمٌ عَادُونَ. Truly you are a people who transgress. Limits have been set. You've been created with normal desires, but you deliberately ignore them, and you fuel and stimulate yourself to go towards a deviant lifestyle. You are transgressors. Next slide, please. Do you think it's a problem unique to the Prophet Lut? Sexual deviation has been a problem throughout history. In the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it was a problem. Who was the governor of Basra? How do you think Basra was kept in power and control? A ruthless, brutal dictator was kept in place. Ziyad. A man who had no scruples. He could use excessive force and not even bat an eye. Who was Ziyad? Whose son was he? We don't even know whose son he is. And so history says he is Ziyad bin Abi, Ziyad the son of his father. Sexual problems were there even at that time. Again, it's not a problem unique to those times. Prophets were sent to reform these excessive tendencies. Problems are there in our times also. Again, just the tip of the iceberg. Look at this statistic which Jessica Williams, that TV journalist, producer, quotes. She says that in the early part of the 21st century, this country spends $10 billion on satisfying its deviant sexual appetite, which is almost equal to the amount that it gives out in foreign aid. Homosexuality is not something normal, but through pornography, you can fuel and stimulate the deviant desires. It can happen. Conclusion. Next slide, please. Look at the fifth example. Prophet Shu'aib. Ayah number 181 of Surah Shu'ara. كَذَّبَ أَصْحَابُ الْأَيْكَ الْمُرْسَلِينَ. Prophet Shu'aib was sent to the people of Aika. They rejected him. What was his message to them? What was their problem that required reformation? Economic corruption, I characterize it as. أَوْفُ الْكَيْلَ. When you measure, keep it well. Don't undermeasure. وَلَا تَكُونُ مِنَ الْمُخْسِرِينَ. Don't give short measure. وَزِنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. The standard which we use should be proper and fair. ولا تبخسوا الناس أشياءهم ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين. Don't cheat people. The question of economic equality, the question of economic exploitation, problems that existed at all times, they were there. In the Prophet's time, they were there. In Imam's time, they are there even today. Next slide, please. This class system that was introduced after the Prophet's death, it created huge problems in the Ummah, such that there were companions who became rich and richer and super rich. Well, there are details about this, but one example. One of the companions, when he dies, he leaves behind so much gold that you had to use an axe to break up that gold to distribute to the heirs. This excessive class system of rich and poor, economic exploitation that took place, was one of the reasons Imam Hussein alayhi salam had to rise up and reform that society. Is it a problem that existed only at that time? It's there all the time. Tip of the iceberg. Look at this statistic. Jessica Williams quotes this particular fact that she says, in some countries, the government pays so much to the farmers, it subsidizes their cows at an estimated rate of $2.5 a day. And given the fact that there are hundreds of millions of people in the world today who don't even have a dollar a day, that cow is more respected than hundreds of millions of people. No, no, no. There's some countries that pay $7.5 a day for a cow. So she makes a sarcastic remark. It seems that if the Japanese cow and the European cow were to travel together, the Japanese would be traveling business class. At the time when 75% of the population of the world is suffering economic exploitation, the very problems that the prophets had to face, maybe individually, Imam Hussein alayhi salam faced collectively to bring about reformation: economic corruption, political subjugation and oppression, social discrimination, obsession with the dunya and construction and frivolity, problems that then become obstacles to the truth and to justice and to divine values. If preaching, if example, if guidance doesn't work, then the last measure becomes giving life and blood. That is the example of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So the conclusion: if we are to weep in such a way that our weeping will connect with the purpose of existence, we need to identify why is it that Imam alayhi salam made this uprising. What was he fighting against? One. Two, what are the same problems that exist today? Three, how do I, first of all, live according to the principles of Imam? And four, how do I fight against the evil which Imam Hussein alayhi salam opposed? And five, if nothing else is successful, then am I ready to die for it? These five steps are required for us to undertake as we sit and participate in mourning. Today I would like to share with you the example of the problem of social discrimination that was there in society and how Imam Hussein alayhi salam confronted it. Can we have the next slide, please? The problem of slaves, the lower class, the servants, the downtrodden. True, there is one particular slave we commemorate, that of Joan of Abu Dharr, slave of Abu Dharr. But interestingly enough, in the history of Karbala, with almost 15 slaves who were present and who gave up their lives. And that's an honor. That's an honor. People like Nasr bin Abi Nazar, we honor their memory. And Sa'ad bin Harf, the slave, both of them were the slaves and servants of Imam Ali alayhi salam. We honor the memory of Munjih bin Sahm, slave of the second Imam. Aslam bin Amr and Qarib bin Abdullah Du'ali, slaves of the third Holy Imam. Harf bin Nabhan, the slave of Hamza, Sayyid al-Shuhada at his time. and other companions, slaves like Jabir bin Hajjaj and Rafi' bin Abdullah and Sa'ad, the slave of Amr bin Khalid, and Salim bin Amr, and Shawzab, the slave of Abbas bin Shabib Shakiri, and Wadih Turki. These are some of the slaves who were there. But there's one slave about whom there's more detail available. Next slide, please. And that is Joan. Joan bin Hawi. He was the slave of Abu Dharr. After Abu Dharr, Abu Dharr was not an ordinary companion. مَا أَظَلَّتِ السَّمَاءُ الْغَبْرَى وَمَا أَقَلَّتِ الْأَرْضُ الْخَضْرَى مِنْ عَلَىٰ أَصْدَقِ لَهْجَ مِنْ أَبِي ذَرْ. The sky has not given cover. The earth has not been a carpet for a person more truthful than Abu Dharr. To that companion was this man a slave. Notice the effect that he would have on this slave. When Abu Dharr stands up for the truth, and then he's exiled to Rabza, and then he dies out there, Joan returns back to Medina. But he continues in the service of the Ahlul Bayt, of the first Imam, and then the second Imam, and then the third Imam. When he comes to Karbala, he comes as the servant of the fourth Holy Imam, alayhim as-salam. But he was not just a servant. He had a particular skill that contributed to Karbala. He was an expert in weapons making, in weapons polishing, in weapons preparation, and weapon recognition also. Come the day of Ashura, and around the time of Zuhr, and he comes to Imam alayhi salam, and he requests for permission now to participate in the battle. So Imam alayhi salam, he frees him from all obligations. He tells him, "Anta minni fi iznin." You have permission to leave if you may so wish. "Innama tabi'tana talaban lil'afiyah." You were along with us so long as we could provide you with comfort and privileges. "فَلَا تَبْتَلِي بِطَرِيقِنَا." But right now, we are not in a position to provide anymore. We've got a confrontation here. You are free to leave. Joan responds by saying, "يَبْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أَنَا فِي الرَّخَاءِ أَلْحَسُ قِصَاعَكُمْ وَفِي الشِّدَّةِ أَخْذُلُكُمْ." So long as you are in good times, you provided for me, and I enjoyed the benefits. But now when you are in constraint, I should abandon you? Look at the decency and the integrity of this man. Compare it with many of those who didn't even recognize who Imam was. Or if they recognized, they were not even ready to come forward. And then John says, "إن ريحي لمنتن." I know my body smell and odor is not very good. Well, he's a laborer. He is a servant. What smell can he have? "Oh, I know my position is low. وَإِنَّ حَسَبِ لَئِيمٌ." I know my family background is low. I've got no social status. وَإِنَّ لَوْنِي أَسْوَدٌ. I know I'm black in skin. I've got no position. فَتَنَفَّسْ عَلَيَّ بِالْجَنَّةِ. But I got just one request. I know the skin color, one. My family background, two. Or my skin smell, three. These are not the true worth of a human being. The true worth of a human being is to recognize the truth, one. To understand who that leader is, two. To live up to it, three. If necessary, to die for it, four. And to gain that maximum pleasure, and that's paradise, five. Give me that chance. فَتَنَفَّتْ عَلَيَّ بِالْجَنَّةِ. And Imam alayhi salam says, he grants him that permission. Can I have the next slide, please? You want to understand the depth of the belief and the sense of sacrifice that John expressed. Look at his battle cry. Perhaps he's an uneducated man. Perhaps he's from a low background. But the companionship he had with Abu Dharr and with all the other Imams, look at the way it transformed him. When he comes to the battlefield, he says, "كَيْفَ تَرَى الْكُفَّارَ دَرْبَ الْأَسْوَدِ بِالسَّيْفِ ضَرْبًا عَنْ بَنِي مُحَمَّدِ أَذُبُّ عَنْهُمْ بِاللِّسَانِ وَالْيَدِ أَرْجُو بِهِ الْجَنَّةَ يَوْمَ الْمَوْرِدِ." against you people of Kufa. I've come here, look at me, I'm just a Negro, a black man, a smelling person, a laborer. But let me tell you one thing. I've recognized the truth. I know what is right and I know what is wrong. I know my black skin, my bad smell, my low social background is not a barrier. I have submitted myself to the truth. I am ready to defend with my tongue and with my sword. This man, I'm ready to die. And then I gain Jannah. Look at the battle cry of this man. The lowest of the low, Karbala, elevates him. When he falls to the ground, Imam Ali Salam rushes to his deathbed. Next slide, please. There are very few people who have been honored with this privilege of being visited by the Imam on their deathbed. Other than Abbas and Qasim and Ali Akbar, there were two prominent companions, Hur and Muslim bin Awsajah. But there were two slaves. One of them is Joan. When Imam alayhi salam comes on the deathbed and he takes his head, he prays for him. Imam prays for very few people. One of them is Joan. Allahumma, next slide please. Allahumma, tayyib riha. Allahumma, bayyid wajha. اللهم احشره مع الأبرار اللهم عرف بينه وبين محمد وآل محمد. Look at the lofty status this man has gained. The lowest of the low. Oh Allah, brighten his face. Skin color is not the criteria. Has the face seen the truth and died for it? That's what makes it bright. Body smell because of labor. That's not the criteria. This man has used his skin, flesh and blood for the truth. He smells pure and good in the world of truth and paradise. Oh Allah, raise him with the virtuous because he has died with the virtuous. Oh Allah, bring him close with the Holy Prophet and with the Al of the Prophet because he recognized them. And he lived with them, and he served them, and he died for them. As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah, wa ala al-arwah alati halat bi fina'ik wa anakhat bi rahmik. Alaykum minna jami'an salamullah abadan ma baqina wa baqiyan laylu wa nahara.